This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, and always streaming at rightscast.net. This episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast on the RightsCast Network is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering RightsCast listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership, and I don't know about you, but I could always do with a few more audiobooks in my life, especially if one of those is going to be free. So visit audibletrial.com/RightsCast today and browse their unmatched selection of audio programs and download a title for free and start listening. That title might even be, Tracy S. Phillips' Best Kept Secrets. It's really easy, folks, so head to audibletrial.com/RightsCast. That's WRITESCAST. Don't forget the S in the middle there. audibletrial.com/RightsCast today to download your free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership to Audible. All right, on with the show. For those in the community with an interest in seeing their work published traditionally, landing an agent is seen as a significant rite of passage. To undergo this rite, however, well, if you're a regular listener to this show or an industry vet, you know how challenging it can be to undertake the long journey down Query Road. It's rank with rejection, self-doubt, and other strife, and it can take hundreds of agent queries to find representation for one's manuscript, assuming one finds representation at all. But as today's guest will explain, it doesn't have to be this way. There are other routes to traditional publication, and she'll share how she found her way to traditional publishing non-traditionally. Hey there. I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 74 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. Our guest today is Tracy S. Phillips. Tracy is a serial artist who lives in Madison, Wisconsin with her husband and two dogs. In her home where she teaches piano lessons, playing music and creating art are a way of life. Best Kept Secrets is her debut novel released by Crooked Lane Books in October 2019, the manuscript for which won a Hugh Holpin Award in 2018. Stay tuned after the interview for updates about what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Tracy S. Phillips, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
It's so great to be here, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thinking this is going to be a very useful conversation. I know that anytime we jump into topics related to the world of traditional publishing and querying and what it takes to get oneself a book in their hands through one of those big publishers, it's a very popular episode. So I'm sure our listeners are eager to jump right in. So why don't we start here with this? For those listeners who might not be in the know, or for those who need a refresher, what is it we mean when we use the phrase traditional publishing?
Traditional book publishing, you know, is when a publisher offers an author a contract, and in turn, they print, publish, and sell your book through booksellers and other retailers. The publisher essentially buys the rights to publish your book, and then they pay you royalties from the sales.
Right. So that's kind of the entire outline of it in a nutshell. And there are many different paths, of course, to traditional publishing.
Right.
We know that the industry has been very dynamic, especially in the last few years. And that kind of brings me now to your specific path to traditional publishing, because I know that you're traditionally published, but you didn't necessarily follow the traditional map of, you know, querying agents through email and digging them up here and there to actually land your agent. So what is it that made your journey to traditional publishing different?
A lot of things, mostly just life. You know, I had been working at this for almost 10 years now, and I had written 4 manuscripts up to the point where I got Best Kept Secrets, the contract with Crooked Lane Books. The journey was a lot of twists and turns and a lot of, you know, self-doubt and just trying and trying again. You know, at some point I toyed with self-publishing, and, you know, and still, you know, there's the idea of possibly hybrid publishing eventually in the future, but, you know, every writer's path is completely different. So, and when I say, you know, life got in the way of things, you spend, you know, so much time after you've finished your manuscript, sending out individual queries, and we'll, I think, talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, you're trying to reach out to an agent who is going to represent you so that they can, you know, bridge the gap between you, the artist, and the publisher. So my journey included taking care of my mom a lot, and she became really ill in the last year right when I had my manuscript completely finished. So when she went into hospice care in Indiana, I was spending a lot of time driving down there, and I really didn't have the time anymore for all the querying and all the time that takes. So I found this event on Twitter, a couple of events on Twitter that where you could pitch your book to several agents and editors, you know, sometimes up to 50 or even 80 agents and editors could be looking for your work at the same time. And I'm like, oh, great. Well, what a time saver, you know. So I joined the event and pitched my work. And that's where my editor from Crooked Lane Books found me. So, and then she requested the work, and then there's a process involved in that, of course. That didn't mean they were going to publish it right off the bat. Of course, they had to, you know, read the manuscript and decide if it was for them, if it was a fit. And then they did. And 6 months later, on Halloween, on my very favorite holiday, my editor called me and said, hey, we're going to send you a contract.
Well, that's always an exciting email to get. And it's amazing, too, that you mentioned you received this email on Halloween, because in my experience...
Yeah, she called me.
Oh, she called you. That's great. Yeah. And the interesting thing about it, too, just as a matter of coincidence, is that it coincided with a holiday. And I have actually found in all of my experience being offered, you know, contracts for different manuscripts, I've always received them, eerily enough, on the day after Christmas. It is, I don't understand, I don't know what it is, but it's December 26th. And this December 26th came and went without a new contract, but that was expected. I didn't have anything new out there, but there's just something about that day every year. There must be something about the holidays, right?
Yeah, and maybe you like Christmas a lot, and so...
Right. I mean, I do enjoy Christmas. I would say Halloween is probably my favorite, but, you know, no matter what the holiday is, it's just kind of a funny little coincidence there. But I'm glad you mentioned a few things in there that were really important, I think, to pick out. And the first of those is this mention of we have traditional publishing, right? You have described what that tends to look like. You mentioned self-publishing, and I think that on its face, that is a pretty clear term. But you also mentioned hybrid publishing. And I do want to let listeners know, if you are a new listener to the RightsCast Network, way, 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 way back in episode 9, we had Kristen Oakley on the show who talked specifically about what hybrid publishing is and the kind of opportunities that it can offer writers. And so if you're interested in learning more about hybrid publishing, you can visit episode 9. And another curiosity that I had for you, Tracy, actually has to do with this Twitter event that you were part of. What was the actual Twitter event through which you found Crooked Lane Books, or I should say through which Crooked Lane found you?
The Twitter event was hashtag PitMad, and that's an event that happens, I think, twice a year. And like I said, there will be a lot of agents and editors who are actively looking for work. And I think that's the key, because you know, when we're querying agents, we don't, you know, unless you're really diving into, you have to really dive into their websites, and you have to research each agent specifically to make sure that they are someone who is going to like your work and who is actually looking for whatever genre you're writing. So it's really, really important to connect with people on that level, that, 'cause they need to love your manuscript as much as you do, so that they can in turn turn around and pitch your work to a publishing company. So the hashtag PitDart and hashtag PitMad are the two events that that I worked through. And if you research on Twitter, the events come up like a couple of different times a year, but you have to sort of follow to find when those events occur. And I was looking just yesterday, and neither one of those have been announced yet. So unfortunately, I can't tell you, oh, it's going to be on XY date, because they haven't been announced yet. But I know a lot of people who have tried them. And I'm the only person I know of who has been successful through PitDart and PitMad. The events are, let me talk about the event itself too a little bit, because you have to follow the rules of the game, right? You have to pitch your work your with your log line or whatever. And, you know, according to the rules of Twitter, you can't pitch the same, or you can't tweet the same thing over and over again. Twitter really frowns on that, and they'll block you. So it's a great opportunity if you're allowed to pitch your work maybe 8 times in 8 hours. Sometimes it's less than that, but you get to rewrite your log line every time. And hopefully one of those times you get it right, you nail it, and somebody sees it and they're going to love it. So I think it's good practice for writing log lines too.
And I think that I'll throw in a little clarification here on the point of log lines, because I think that's actually something that we have not covered in past episodes of this show. And so, folks, if you want to learn more about what a log line is, I do have a resource up actually on my author website. You can visit rrcampbellwrites.com/writing-prompt-generator. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/writing-prompt-generator. And though that page is generally meant to toss you one of over 30 billion different possible writing prompts, the format that is kind of laid out for those writing prompts takes the shape of what I think many folks would consider a log line, or at least has the elements of a log line. It's very, I'll read it here briefly, but it's, in a world where X character must act before deadline or consequences. And as long as you've got those elements in there somewhere, I think that that, generally speaking, represents pretty well a well-rounded manuscript. And like you say, you do have to come up with new phrasing every time you throw it out in something like PitMad or PitDark, because otherwise Twitter will not show it to the world. And then you're certainly not going to find an agent or editor. So you get a little practice rearranging the elements, making them look catchy. And that is, of course, the logline approach. Just one approach of many to getting the attention of agents and editors during these contests, but the rules, right? Those are so important, and I'm glad you mentioned them. So though you may not have to do as much agent-by-agent research for these kind of events, your point is very well taken. You do have to do your research on the rules, because if you run afoul of them, it is just a very bad look, and a very bad look publicly, right?
Right. No, and I think it's really important. You know, whenever you're querying or talking to agents or other professionals, to be professional, present yourself as a professional person. You don't want to send a query letter that's like, and I heard somebody did this once in a conference, that they got the query letter and it was like, yo, Cindy, you know, and she'd never been approached that way before, but.
I think sometimes people think they're doing something to make themselves stand out. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we want to stand out? Because there's certainly something to be said for trying to be ingenuitive or innovative. But in a world where agents are going through hundreds of queries at a time, sometimes those surprises are just, it kind of distracts from your work ultimately, right? Because it's not an expected thing. Suddenly they're thinking about how they were greeted or whatever else you threw into the query to be fun, creative, and cool, allegedly. And suddenly they're not paying attention to the actual meat of your query. And that is your story. And the story is kind of an important part of the whole process. So yes, you are again, very spot on here.
And I mean, you know, you should be approaching your work like it is a business, because that's the way they see it too. They are looking at you, the writer, and your work as a business venture. So it's really important to present yourself professionally, however it is. If it's on Twitter or if it's, you know, through querying, or even, you know, and when you meet people in person at conferences and stuff, it's really important. You know, first impressions are everything.
They really are. And I kind of want to turn at this point here to this idea of other writers. I suppose we'll kind of focus on others' experiences too, because you mentioned a few minutes ago that you weren't aware of other writers who have necessarily had the same kind of success that you have through these Twitter pitch events. But that said, are you aware of other writers who have followed other non-traditional paths to publication? And in what ways were their journeys similar or different from yours?
So this is really interesting. My friend and critique partner, Amber Boudreau, is publishing this year with Dragon Street Press. And she and I have been looking at each other's works for years and stuff, so I'm so excited for her. She writes YA fiction, and it's a book about a dragon called The Dragoneer that's going to be coming out in June. She found her publisher on Twitter too, but it wasn't through PitMad or PitDark. She was looking on hashtag manuscript wish list, which is it's hashtag MSWL. So hashtag manuscript wish list shows what agents are actually seeking, and agents and editors will tweet, I'm looking for this right now, or I want, you know, boy, I would love it if somebody would send me a crime fiction with an Asian protagonist, you know. So, you know, they're going to be really specific about it too. And so my friend Amber saw a tweet from a little publishing company called Dragon Street Press, and, you know, what a coincidence that her book is about a dragon. So she tweeted them, you know, do you want me to send you, or can I send you a manuscript? And they said, sure. So, and, you know, it's just in that little, you know, moment, it's great that they requested her work, but there's still no guarantees. You know, you don't, you know, and for writers out there who don't know, even if you get that, you know, request for a manuscript or whatever, that's great. And, you know, and that feels so good. But again, there's no guarantees that anybody's going to, you know, want to publish your work. So for her anyway, they did. And like I said, her book is going to be coming out in June. So, I mean, I just thought that was kind of cool that her path and mine in both involved Twitter, and she does not have an agent either.
And I'll say this, I actually haven't thought about it in this way before, but hearing your story and hearing Amber's story, and I didn't realize that was actually how Amber found Dragon Street Press. I know Amber as well, of course, as you do through the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. Amber and I chatted actually, I think, a couple of months ago about what it's like to gear up for promoting your first, your debut novel, etc. So much luck to Amber as she gets that off the ground, and congratulations to her as well. But what your stories remind me of actually are my own to some extent, because I found Nine Star Press through Twitter. And interestingly enough, though I participated in events like PitDark, and there are countless other hashtags that go up and down throughout the year, I knew that Nine Star Press was tracking and looking for tweets on days where I was tweeting, but I never got anything from them. And in fact, I got very little traction from any agents or editors, but I was like, you know, I do think that my book would still be a good fit for Nine Star. And I knew other authors who had been published with them, and they had great things to say. So I did a little research off Twitter. I didn't, you know, message them directly or comment, maybe like Amber did. But I went to their website and I found a portal and learned more about how to submit to them in their, you know, their quote unquote traditional way. And it was actually through that portal and just through getting in their slush pile, the good old fashioned way, that I eventually found publications. So here we are again, the three of us, none of whom are agented, were able to find ourselves in this traditional publishing model in a sort of non-traditional way, all through Twitter and all through these very different paths.
Right. And, you know, and your point is really good, too, that if a publishing company or an agent even requests your work, it's always a really good idea to make sure you do your research and find out everything that you can about that company, because you want to know that they are a good fit for you as well. Even if they are requesting your work and you've been trying for years and years to get somebody to read your manuscript, you really should just double check and make sure that they're a valid company, that, you know, I don't know, there's like too many other like weirdos out there that just, you know, I worry about that sometimes.
This episode of the R.R. Campbell WritesCast on the WritesCast Network is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Getting your writer's platform set up can be overwhelming, and that is why Dandelion created its Author Quick Start packages. These streamlined websites were created to help you get your website up and running quickly and affordably. They're designed with writers in mind and include the pages, features, and add-ons writers are most likely to need. Dandelion Web Marketing has been helping writers build a thriving author platform through strategic web marketing for years. So go to dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to explore services designed specifically for writers and authors. There you can get started on your website or get set up with a 30-minute consultation to ask any digital marketing questions you have with no obligation. So again, that site is dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. Thanks for listening. Right, and that's a really good point. And I can actually say from personal experience, and I have never told this story publicly before, so listeners, brace yourselves for this, but I actually was offered a contract for publication by a press. This is one of the contracts that came in the day after Christmas, maybe a couple of years ago, and I ended up turning that contract down. And the reason that I did was because I did my research on the back end. You know, it was fairly easy to submit my manuscript to this press. I was able to just kind of follow the same standard packaging that I'd prepared when putting it out to agents and when submitting to other smaller presses. And I was really elated when I first heard back from them. I was like, wow, this is going to be tremendous. I'm so excited to know that I'll be published both by Nine Star and by this other press now. It'll open me up to a new audience. And when I got the contract from them, I did my diligence. I did not sign it right away and then read it. I read it and I found some very disconcerting poison pills in that contract, specifically as it pertained to royalties rates. I found them to be rather abysmal considering that it is a smaller press. I think with smaller presses, you generally want to see a little higher royalty rates because they don't always have the same reach as, say, the big five publishers. But the thing that really threw me off in this contract was that there was a non-disparagement agreement included within the contract itself. And for those who are unfamiliar, a non-disparagement agreement is basically, at least in the way it was phrased here, was this very blanket clause that said in no way, publicly or privately, can you ever say anything negative about the press, its agents, its representatives, blah, 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 legalese. And I went, yeah. Huh. That is troubling. And you might say, okay, well, Ryan, why is it troubling? You shouldn't be saying bad things about your publisher, but here's the deal, right? When you're offered a contract, whether it's by an agent or by a publisher, it's generally standard practice to be able to contact other folks who have been published by that publisher or who have been working with that agent and just ask them a couple of questions about their experience. Right. Do they enjoy it? What's the process been like for them? And I now knew that since there was a non-disparagement clause in this contract, I couldn't trust anything anyone said about this publisher. And so they had given me a week to review the contract, and I waited until that seventh day, mostly because I was still considering, I don't know, maybe I'll roll with it. But I was like, no, I can't. I can't justify giving my work to someone who may not be entering into this in good faith. So I turned that contract down, and it just is. It can be really exciting to get it offered to get offered a contract, like, you know, and like I'm sure Amber and many listeners know, but it's important to do that research because the last thing you want to do is get stuck in a contract where they're demanding a certain amount of work from you and they have all of these rights over your work. And if you happen to professionally approach them with a disagreement, they can say and do whatever they want. And what is your recourse? You really don't have one outside the court of law, and who wants to get into that? So Long story there, but yes, doing your research obviously is where we're bringing that back to.
You know, and you're touching on that no guarantees thing too. You know, I'm still looking for an agent for future works because, you know, I only had a one book contract with Crooked Lane, but, you know, I'm not sure. I don't read contracts for a living. I'm not a lawyer, right?
Right.
So I want an agent who's going to be able to navigate those possibilities with me because there's just too many fine prints and little things. So, and actually I wanted to tell this story too, because, it sort of fits into that conversation of no guarantees. I had an agent this summer for about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And it was a really exciting time for me because I had gone to Thriller Fest in New York City. And I, you know, I was pitching another novel that I wrote to like 6 or 8 agents at the conference. And, you know, out of 6, I think 5 requested the manuscript. And I would have walked away from that feeling pretty good. But then that first night, an agent called me. She emailed me first. And then she said, hey, I noticed that you don't have an agent, that you're with this publishing company. And I'd really like to see any of your future works. So I emailed this manuscript, and she basically wrote it on the train to meet me in New York City. And we sat down, and she had offered me agency before we even ordered coffee.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, okay, wait a minute, you know, just trying to wage the whole thing, gauge it, you know. And we ended up talking for like 2 hours, and I thought, this woman is really great, so I really want her at my back, you know. We went through the stuff, and I signed the contract, and like on August 1st or something, she was hospitalized. So she had a mental breakdown.
Oh, no.
And her career became in jeopardy. And I mean, it was a very, very sad, sad situation. But, you know, in the middle of it all, I had to call up my agency and say, pull me.
Right. And I think that though it seems this went a very unexpected direction, I think that your experience and mine to some extent with this publisher that I simply turned the contract down for, it's all kind of a testament to this idea that it's a long and winding road, and it's going to feel it sometimes as though you have reached a new summit on the mountain, so to speak. But bear in mind, you know, that mountain just goes and goes and goes, and it's so easy to lose your footing and slip down a few feet here and there. But as long as you're still on the climb, if you keep the, you know, the pack on your back and you stay hydrated in this climb, if we're sticking with the metaphor here, you can put yourself in a great position. I've seen you get a ton of really great press for a really great book, and you're just chugging on. And like you say, you're still looking for an agent. I too still look, I'm actually getting back on Query Road in a couple of months here. I can't believe it. It's been a couple of years, but new manuscripts and new adventures
Doesn't
await.
Doesn't that feel weird? You know, you have your books out there and everything, and you're like still querying people. And it just, I mean, it feels like that should have been the end game at some point, right?
Yeah, and that's
the
whole thing.
It never is.
It never is. There's this idea that there is an end game, right? And actually, I recorded before our interview today, I recorded the introduction for this episode. And I mentioned specifically about how getting an agent feels like this rite of passage, right? It feels like something that once you're there, everything's going to be bright and shiny and wonderful. And you should absolutely bask in that if you achieve it. You should bask in the success of finishing a manuscript, of getting it published non-traditionally or hybrid published or whatever the case might be. Celebrate every step, but know that it's going to be important to be flexible and keep your eyes to the future, right? That's the way you can set yourself up for the best success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one thing we have talked about to some extent here is where folks can start trying out these non-traditional paths to traditional publication. We've been mentioning specifically Twitter, but are there other places where people might consider trying to get themselves published traditionally, non-traditionally?
You know, I would recommend hashtag Pitch Wars also on Twitter, because they have a mentoring program where there are authors who are reading people's work and doing critiques. They're also critiquing your queries and your log lines. A colleague of mine, Lane Fargo, is a Pitchworks mentor too, and she's a debut novelist as well. But I know that they have so many other great writers and agents who are involved in the Pitch Wars mentoring program. So that's another venue you can try. Again, it's Twitter.
Right, it's Twitter. And I'll say, you mentioning Pitch Wars reminds me of, and I should be thinking about this actively because I am a mentor in this program, but also RevPit exists. Hashtag RevPit, R-E-V as in Victor, P as in Peter, I-T as in Thomas. That is the place, another great option where you can hang out. And the way that it works is I, as a mentor or an editor for this particular contest, I'll receive up to 100 submissions from different writers across all genres specifically that I'm asking for. And then I will go through my own slush pile. And from that 100, from those 100 query packages and first five pages, I will select an author to work with intensively over the course of about a month and a half. We do a full developmental edit. We work really hard on the query letter. And then we have this big showcase at the end of the event. And during that showcase, agents and editors can visit the pages that the pages online that all of this is hosted, and they can say, hey, I'd like to see your first 50 pages. I'd like you to query me at this address. And I can say firsthand that my mentee from this last year, from the 2019 RevPit, Lisa Bradeau, now has an agent. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of her. She had a brilliant manuscript using some just really fantastic upmarket suspense. So another option there for you folks. Keep an eye out on Pitch Wars, like Tracy says, but also RevPit, which will be getting started here in, I think we're going to be doing a mini event in late February 2020, and then it'll kick off in earnest in March. So eyes to Twitter, everyone.
I hadn't heard of that one yet.
Yeah, it's only
maybe I'll be submitting my next work to it.
Hey, it's an option. I mean, I think there are about a dozen of us editors now. We are not at the same size as Pitch Wars. I know Pitch Wars has been a real institution on Twitter for quite some time in the writing community. RevPit is entering its fourth year, I want to say. And of the first 3 years, I was a mentor for the first two, or for the second and third year. So looking forward to it again. All right, so we've talked Twitter plenty here, but I'm also curious to know what advice you might have to offer folks who are in the querying trenches now or who are otherwise just trying to find their way to traditional publishing, not traditionally or traditionally.
I think it's do your research. Make sure that the people that you connect with are looking for the type of work that you have. You know, I think I said that before. And drink a lot of wine.
That's certainly one way to do it. Yeah, drink a lot of wine. Fair, very fair.
But also keep writing. And, you know, with my first manuscript, which, of course, you know, I wrote that manuscript and I was like, well, this is obviously the next New York Times bestseller. So I tried pitch, you know, I pitched that book to probably close to 120 agents and I still have not gotten any interest in that book. So, you know, it's the thing, you move on to the next thing. Maybe you try something else. But really it's, I mean, the biggest piece of writing advice that I give, I think, is it's the old adage of butt and chair. And get your, you know, writing game on. Just write every day. Write until you don't see the words anymore, but you see the story that you're telling, and keep revising because you have to just keep trying. One of these days you'll make it, you'll get interest. Somebody will want to see your manuscript and they'll want to read it. You know, and another part of that too, when you're querying, do small batches at a time, you know, and I know all of this takes time and it's so frustrating because they'll say, well, we won't be, they don't respond for 6 or 8 weeks and sometimes longer. I received answers to query letters a year or 2 years after I pitched to people in person at conferences. And that to me just tells you how extremely busy those people are. You know, they're piling through hundreds of emails a day. And So you have to make it stand out. You have to make your query specific and personal, and follow the guidelines on the agency websites. I think that's the most important thing too. And for looking for agents, I think manuscript wish list online is a great resource as well. And each agency website also has the agents, you know, listings of what they're looking for, whether they're looking for something or whether they're closed completely to queries. So, but it's just keep trying, keep writing, and, you know, keep trying to put your work out there, and eventually somebody will get it.
Right. And another thing I really like that you mentioned in there was this idea that you shouldn't be afraid to switch gears. You mentioned that you have a manuscript where you've queried 120 agents and you're not getting the traction that you might like to see, but that doesn't mean the only thing you're doing is worrying and fretting over that one manuscript. I know that in my experience, right, anyway, the manuscript that I'm going to be putting back on Query Road here in the next couple of months is actually the manuscript that I was offered that contract for like 2 years ago. And I had to set that manuscript aside for a while. It has gone through some extremely deep developmental edits. I've re-envisioned it a few different times, but I haven't only been working on that manuscript for the last 2 years. I've been shifting gears. I'll hop and do some short stories for a while. I'll visit the sci-fi series, my empathy series that I'm working on. So don't be afraid to really set something aside for a while, and you'll see it with different eyes when you come back
to
it.
That's true.
And I do want to mention for listeners that we've talked about this manuscript wish list as being a thing on Twitter. There is actually also a manuscriptwishlist.com. That's a great place to do research into agents specifically. They might not be tweeting on that website because that's not how the website works, but it's a great place to find profiles for different agents across a number of genres. They've got a really nice search feature here, so you can look specifically only at agents who might be interested in your work. So manuscriptwishlist.com, another great place to go. And I should also mention, going back a couple of minutes, reviseresub.com is the RevPit website. If you're not on Twitter, reviseresub.com is a great way to try and stay in touch with that as a possible mentorship opportunity. So I think we've covered a great amount here. We do have today, though, this is the first time we have a listener question submitted to us through our voicemail inbox, and that number is 608-284-8342. So listeners, we are taking questions for guests on our shows now. You can keep your eyes on rightscast.net to know which guests are having interviews soon and what it is you might want to learn from them. Today's voicemail, well, let me just play it for us here. And then once our question asker has asked their question, I will turn it over to you, Tracy. So let's play their voicemail now.
Hello, this is Alicia from Chicago, and my Twitter handle is @ F like Frank, C like Charlie, M like Mary, ideas. And I have a question for Tracy S. Phillips about traditional publishing non-traditionally. And one of the questions I have is, I write nonfiction narrative, I ghostwrite, and I am looking now to publish something under my own name because I want to, and also because it'll further my ghostwriting career. And my question is, what are some good ideas in ways to network with agents? And how would I find agents that are interested in the genre that I specialize in? And where would I go to meet them in person? I have, you know, tried many things online, but those face-to-face contacts are great. And if there's any special conferences or meetings that I should consider, I'd love to know about them. Thank you.
All right. So thank you very much to Alicia for that voicemail. Again, listeners, in the future, you can reach us at 608-284-8342. But what Alicia was really getting at there, I think, was great. It's about finding agents in one's genre and then opportunities maybe to meet with agents face to face. So what do you have for us here, Tracy?
All right. Well, I think meeting agents face to face was always like the best impact that I felt like I had, and basically through conferences. So she's from Chicago. Alicia, you're from Chicago, so I know that there's a lot of Chicago conferences for writers in that area. There's also a big conference up here in Madison every spring, the Writers Institute at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. So those are just a couple of conferences. Another place I've found conferences is by joining writers' organizations in my genre. So since I write mystery and psychological thriller, I belong to ITW, which is the International Thriller Writers Organization. I belong to Mystery Writers of America, and I belong to Sisters in Crime. And all of those, I don't know if ITW has local organizations, but I know Mystery Writers and Sisters in Crime have local chapters in Chicago area and in the Midwest. And all of those chapters also host events, and they bring people in to talk to writers about what they're doing. Some of the best experiences I've had have been going to conferences in this area. Another place to look would be Writer's Digest. If you don't subscribe to Writer's Digest, I totally recommend it, because they used to have a really great online presence, and I found that that sort of fizzled out in the last few years, but they do send out like a real paper magazine, and in it, it also lists agents and people looking, and conferences all over the country. And I know sometimes it can seem really expensive to do that, so, you know, definitely weigh it with your budget and, you know, and travel expenses and stuff. And so, you know, like for me, I mostly tried to hit the main conferences that were closest to me, so I didn't have, you know, big airfare to California or, you know, all of that. But, you know, so I'm just letting you know there are a lot. I always found, too, that meeting agents in person is a lot different than, you know, the cold query where you don't really know this person you're sending a letter to. But by meeting them in person, you kind of, you can develop a little bit of a rapport with them, even though the query or the pitches that they'll give you, you'll have a specific number, a specific amount of time, like maybe sometimes it's 5 minutes, sometimes it's a little more. I've been to conferences where it's even less. And so that's a little bit like speed dating. But, you know, again, you're making your first impression. You're meeting with somebody, a face that you can connect that that agency to. And they will give you good and honest feedback right away. They will tell you, oh, that's interesting. Please tell me more about it, you know, or they'll say, well, not really, but I know another agent that you could probably reach out to or something like that. So it's usually, it's a really friendly environment. And so that's something I really recommend.
I couldn't agree more. I actually will add on specifically that the Chicago Writers Association has its Let's Just Write conference on March 21st and 22nd of 2020. And then the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, which you have also referenced there, Tracy, that one is March 26th through the 29th of 2020. And I know at the Writers Institute, that is where I will be doing some face-to-face pitches to agents. I know I think they have maybe 8 different agents that are going to be at the UW Institute this year. I will be interviewing in the next couple of weeks here Lori Shear, who is the conference director. So listeners, you can tune in and get more information about that conference at that time. But the UW Writers Institute is a great place to go. And I would say that even if they weren't a financial supporter of the WritesCast Network, which they are, so thank you very much. But conferences, great places to go, great place to meet these different agents. So thank you for throwing all of that out there. It really is a really nice way to make an impact and to leave with a lasting impression.
Yeah. And, you know, depending on the genre that, you know, that you write, and for Alicia, I don't know what genre you write. There are organizations for young adult, and I would have recommended Romance Writers Association, but recently they've been in the news. I think that organization has just sadly crumbled from the interior. I don't know if you heard about that, Ryan. But,
I have heard, plenty about it, and it continues to be an ongoing implosion. And that could probably do an entire episode unto itself, if not an entire podcast miniseries. So I think the important thing there is, again, doing your research, right?
Yes, again, do your research. But I know that there's other organizations like the ones that Women's Fiction Writers Association is another great organization, and they have conferences and bring in agents to do podcasts and different things too. So there are definitely organizations out there to help you link with other writers and link with agents and professionals in the industry.
So there are some really great resources for you there, Alicia, and for our other listeners who might have had a similar question. And with all of that said, Tracy, let's check back in with you here, and I will ask you to let us know, where is it online that listeners can learn more about you and your work going forward?
I'm on Facebook as Tracy S. Filler. What's my last name? Tracy S. Phillips, author. You can find me there, or you can find me on Instagram. I love Instagram. And you can find me on Twitter at Tracy@64. I think that's my Twitter handle. As much as we've talked about Twitter today, I don't really like it as a way to connect with people.
It is a bit of a challenge, but it is certainly a good resource. And I think your Twitter handle is Tracy64P. I think over there.
Thank you.
Yes, that's Tracey64P. And I know that because I've been scheduling tweets nonstop to get in those voicemail callers. So I've had to tag you a lot. But Tracey64P over on Twitter.
Also, you can always go to my website, which is at TracySPhillips.com without a dot or anything.
All right. Well, there you have it. We've got Twitter, we've got Instagram, we've got Facebook, we've got your website, and we have, almost an hour's worth of insight into traditional publishing non-traditionally here. So thank you very much, Tracy, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network.
Thank you, Ryan. This has been a lot of fun. And I hope that other writers, get something out of this. It seems to me it's a really fluid industry, and you just keep trying.
And there you have it, another interview in the books. To download a transcript of this episode, you can visit its episode page at rightscast.net or find it through our blog at rightscast.net/blog. And if you enjoyed this episode in audio or go on to enjoy it in print, I'd love it if you could leave the Rightscast Network a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the Rightscast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a 5-star rating and review, thank you. And thank you again to Tracy S. Phillips for joining us for this episode. I, of course, owe additional thanks to the Rightscast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for their support, Rightscast Network patrons get access to some great patron perks, including discounts on my editing services, entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques performed by yours truly, and new, and this is, yes, new, we have new Rightscast swag, which, I should mention, is also now available to purchase through our T Public store, which you can find at rightscast.net/store. But anyway, if becoming a patron sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen today in supporting our programming at $1, $2, or a very generous $3 per episode or per month. So start showing your commitment to craft and community today by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. Coming up next on the Rightscast Network is a Novel Approaches episode about tropes and cliches featuring guest co-host Maggie Derrick. That episode will debut on January 24th, 2020 on rightscast.net, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Until that episode debuts, however, you can stay in touch with us by visiting rightscast.net or by saying hello to us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rightscast, or by searching for the Rightscast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com. And remember, you can call us at area code 608-284-8342 and leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in our programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellrights.com or get at me on Twitter, where I can be found as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is RR Campbell signing off. Right on and right well. This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, and always streaming at rightscast.net.